Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Strange and Unusual Podcast early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus and the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
This is Strange and Unusual Headlines with Allison Horrocks. And welcome to the second headlines. Constant use of Ouija board drives 7 people insane. The Long Beach Telegraph, March 4th, 1920. Headline: Constant use of Ouija board drives 7 people insane. Girl, aged 15, introduces the device and convinced other 6 of its spiritual power. Article: Martinez, California, March 4th. Under observation in the insane ward here today are 7 persons who the police say were driven insane by constant use of Ouija boards. Among the unusual charges against them are that they held seances 24 hours long, that they burned $700 in currency to drive away evil spirits conjured up by the Ouija boards, that they lured little children into their house and shaved their hair, burning it to drive away Ouija board spirits, that they did not feed the children thus stolen, and that the children were found in the house in a starving condition. The Ouija board developments center about Adeline Boutini, 15, who is said to have introduced the boards and to have convinced the other 6 that spirits hovered over them day and night. When the police broke down the door, Mrs. Edward Moore screamed that her dead husband was there in spirit, quote, and he will kill you, end quote. Adeline had divested herself of much of her clothing, the better to communicate with the spirits. And when the police arrived, she tried to throw off the remainder of her clothing. The raid was made when neighbors complained that their children had been stolen. Others found in the house were Mrs. Jose Saldivine and 3 men in her family, and Mrs. Sanjean Botini, mother of Adeline. There were 4 Ouija boards in the place. So my first thought after reading that article was, what the hell is going on here? Okay, so 7 people were driven insane by Ouija boards, And according to this article, it was a 15-year-old girl who was commanding it. This gives me a very, like, Salem witchcraft vibe. To go on, they were holding seances for 24 hours. To continue, it says they burned $700 in currency, which, when I looked it up to compare it to today's money and what that would be, it is over $10,000 that they supposedly burned. Then they lured little children into their house, like Hansel and Gretel, shaved their hair, and that's where they stopped talking about the children. We don't know what happened to them after they were released or anything. So, and then we get down to this person named Mrs. Edward Moore, who screamed about her dead husband and that he will kill the police. That's what she screamed to them when they came in. And I compare the name Mrs. Edward Moore to the other names in the story, which appear to be Italian. But Mrs. Edward Moore would be an English name, so this person doesn't seem to be related to them. Did she come to them to hire them to talk to her husband? It doesn't really say anything. And it just sort of ends with there were four Ouija boards there, and that's it. So that article didn't feel very satisfying to me. It didn't have a lot of answers, and it made me more curious. So I looked up more articles about this event in Northern California, and I found more information. Here's an article about the exact same event out of the Oakland Tribune. March 4th, 1920, same day as the first article. Headline: El Cerrito Ouija zealots keep woman prisoner in mystery house, police told. Captive is released as devotees are arrested by police for madmen. Article: a tale of having been held captive for 12 hours in El Cerrito's mystery house, where weird rites were performed over a Ouija board, was added this morning to the evidence which resulted last night in the detention of seven persons in the insane ward of the Contra Costa County Hospital at Martinez. Warned not to leave the room on penalty of bodily harm, Mrs. Tony Benna, neighbor of Mrs. Maria Moro, in whose home the Ouija was invoked for an uninterrupted period of 24 hours, was forced to watch the frenzied zealots bending over the table and to assist in carrying out the instructions, which they believed had been received from the spirits of members of the family who had recently died. She saw them burn new $10 bills, strip most of the clothes off of one of their number, heard them moan and weep, and was present when they offered defiance to the police, who sought to gain admittance. Albany police enter house. After Father J.J. Hennessy of the Albany Church had been admitted to the house and had pleaded with a group, the Albany police, aided by El Cerrito officers, were allowed to enter. There was a brief show of resistance, and the eight persons inside, weakened from their long vigil and with a light of fanaticism in their eyes, were taken into custody. They were Charles Sodavini, laborer, Mrs. Josephine Sodavini, his wife, Mrs. Maria Moro, mother of Mrs. Sodavini, and chief invoker of the powers of the Ouija, Louis Fario, a neighbor, nephew of Mrs. Moro, Barry Fario, his brother, Mrs. Santini Bottini, neighbor, Adeline Bottini, 15-year-old daughter of Mrs. Bottini, G.B. Bottini, her father. Bottini was released that he might return to care for his younger daughter Rosa, a 3-year-old baby, and instructed to appear in Martinez this afternoon when a hearing was held by Judge R.H. Latimer and an insanity commission consisting of Drs. E.W. Merrithew, G.W. Sweetser, and E.B. Fitzpatrick. The story of the power which the Ouija board exerted in the lives and actions of the small group is one that rivals the weirdest accounts of spirit practices in the Middle Ages. In it is mixed, as a pathetic motif, the death of Mrs. Morrow's husband and of her daughter, who was run down by an automobilist a short time ago, and is introduced a fear of the vengeance of the departed Moro, because his widow had planned to marry again. For weeks, Mrs. Moro had been holding silent sessions with the Ouija board, when she secured from it a number which she said was that of the automobile that ran down her daughter. Some of the neighbors, most of whom are her relatives, became fanatical adherents to the belief in its powers. The sessions became more frequent and longer in duration. This week, there have been few hours when the pointer was not moving over the board, and when the little Italian colony was not crowded close and breathless around the table. Night before last, Boutini says, the conditions became exceptionally favorable. No one left the board, except to carry out what he thought to be instructions, and the pale and unnourished watchers sought the voices of the spirits until morning had come and gone and into the afternoon. Then it was that the police came and the arrests followed. Child demanded, but messengers repulsed. Once the board is said to have commanded the group to go to the home of Mrs. Tony Benna and get the daughter of the house, and Mrs. Benna, a prisoner in the room, saw the emissaries depart on their mission. The Benna door was locked, so the enthusiasts beat upon it with a hammer. Tony Benna, worried concerning his wife's absence, drove the messengers away and decided to seek police aid in breaking up the seance. Again, the pointer is said to have spelled out a message that sent Boutini after his money, which he brought back in paper currency, and offered up on a pyre all of those bills, which bore the numeral 7. Rosa Boutini, a small girl, who this morning maintained her belief in the Ouija's powers, was shorn of her long hair in an effort to appease the spirits, and a quantity of old clothing and jewelry was burned. Once the door of the shuttered house opened long enough for one of the group to dart outside that he might seize a small child, who was kept a captive until the police arrived an hour later to find her brown curls had been added to the offerings. Adeline Boutini, a 15-year-old girl and one of the most frenzied of the number, gave to the fire most of the clothing from her body and was all but bare when the officers came. Neighbors who saw the closed blinds and who had heard that Mrs. Benna was being kept inside against her will grew restive as the day wore on. They knew of the Ouija seances, but realized that this one was the most protracted of the many that had been conducted. Today they had been standing about in front of the store near the Moro house, denouncing the wood and pointer that brought the trouble, and recounting the tragic history of the leader, Mrs. Moro. Anger of dead man is feared by widow. It was a year ago that Moro died, and his widow tried to talk to him on the Ouija. Then a speeding automobilist ran down and killed Jenny Moro, and continued on his way without stopping. Mrs. Moro began to talk of deep holes being dug in her backyard, of dreams concerning racing automobile drivers, and of the things that the spirit of Moro was going to do to the man who ran down the little girl. Then she planned to marry again and became obsessed of the fear that Moro's spirit was seeking vengeance for her decision. The seances were more frequent and the penalties to assuage the wrath of Moro more severe. The climax came yesterday. There is only one Ouija board in the house, said little Rosa Bettini this morning. It is queer that people should say there are four. One is enough to give us the messages. G.B. Boutini, father of Rosa and of Adeline, and husband of Mrs. Santini Boutini, all present at the seance, added this. They should have taken exercise and regular meals. It is all right then. They were tired and nervous, but it wasn't the fault of the spirits. At Martinez Today, Charles Sodavini voiced the sentiments of the group held for examination with a declaration, "We believe in the Ouija board, and our faith is unshaken. The board will drive away evil spirits. Do you think we look like maniacs?" So this article answers some of the questions that were raised with the last one that was so confusing and changes some of the details altogether. Starting with a headline, we're now hearing of a woman kept prisoner, which wasn't mentioned in the last article. Now, getting into the article, we see that they call the home where this took place Mystery House, as if that's some sort of known reference. Then we get into who was taken into custody. The Soldovinis were taken into custody, as well as Mrs. Soldovini's mother, who was Maria Moro. So now we see how some of these people are connected, and it's by blood. Also, two Ferrio brothers, who are neighbors of Maria Moro, and the Boutini family, including 15-year-old Adeline Boutini, who was accused of being the instigator in the last article. However, in this one, Maria Moro is said to be the chief invoker of the powers of the Ouija. We then find out that Maria Moro's husband and daughter died recently, her daughter having been hit by a car. And her deceased husband, she fears, is angry because she's planning to marry again. It was at this point in the article that the Mrs. Edward Moore from the original article, I realized she is actually Maria Moro. Her name had been anglicized for whatever odd reason, while the other names had not been in the last article. It then says that Ouija sessions had been going on for weeks. And from one of those sessions, she discovered the number of the car that killed her daughter. Then the Ouija board commands them to go kidnap the daughter of their hostage, Mrs. Benna. And when they found the door locked, they started pounding on it with a hammer. Very intense. After which they were chased away by Tony Benna, who then involved the police. The article goes on to say that the group then burned money, which bore the numeral 7 on them. I'm guessing here that is because it was probably the number of the car that ran down Maria's daughter. And then at one point, one of them darted outside to seize a small child and burn their hair. Adeline Boutini then comes back into the story, and that is to say that she was one of the most frenzied members and was mostly nude by the time police arrived. I'm wondering if they're putting the focus on this 15-year-old girl being almost naked, and in the last article, she was the instigator. I feel like they're focusing on the 15-year-old for sensationalism. It's very sort of titillating to talk of a 15-year-old girl being naked, which is gross. But I'm sure that bit of the story sold papers to someone. Not the right people, but I don't think they care. The article then says that Maria Moro had been performing these seances with the board for a year, and then she began to talk of deep holes being dug in her backyard, which is then never explained in the article. It seems that Maria's dead husband was becoming more demanding, and those participating were disciplined if they didn't comply with the dead man. I still wanted to see if I could find more information about this Ouija board event in El Cerrito, and I did find out more. The next article is from the San Francisco Examiner, March 4th, 1920, same day as the other two articles. Headline, Child Shorn, Money Burned by Command. Italian seeking communication with departed spirit aroused to spiritualistic orgies. Officers coming to investigate barred out and told that passion play is going on. Article. Burning of clothing, furniture, and $200 in currency as a sacrifice demanded by the Ouija board in their efforts to communicate with the dead resulted in the arrest yesterday of seven persons in El Cerrito, Contra Costa County. All are being held in the county hospital at Martinez, pending investigation as to their sanity. Part of the sacrifice given at the demand of the Ouija board was cutting the curls of a neighbor's little girl. Those under detention and observation include Carlos Soldovini, laborer, Mrs. Josephine Soldovini, his wife, Mrs. Maria Moro, mother of Mrs. Soldovini, Mrs. Santini Bettini, daughter of Mrs. Moro, Clara Bettini, her daughter, Luigi Ferraglio, and Victor Ferraglio. The arrests followed after neighbors had reported to the authorities at Martinez that strange orgies were taking place at the Soldovini home, and that efforts to calm the members of the party were without avail. To all urgings by the neighbors, the members of the party said that the Ouija board had demanded the sacrifice of belongings, and that evil spirits must be driven from the house. Stage Passion Play. When the officers arrived at the house where the celebration was in progress, they were informed that they could not come in, as Passion Play was about to be put on. The officers forced their way in and made the arrests over protests. Last Christmas Day, Jeannie Moro, little daughter of Mrs. Maria Moro, was killed in front of her home while delivering a Christmas package. A few weeks prior to this, her father died. The family bought the Ouija board and attempted to communicate with the spirit of Jeannie. The board, so they said, told them to destroy all evil spirits in the house and make the place a home for children. Yesterday was the day the board told them to make a sacrifice to drive away the evil spirits. Then followed the burning of clothing, furniture, and money. Child's curls shorn. Following up the instructions of the Ouija board, the child of a neighbor was captured and shorn of her curls, after which she was sent to her home. When the police arrived, they found a 2-year-old child of another neighbor in bed upstairs, the father pacing up and down the street, unable to get his child. This was explained by the statement that the Ouija board directed that the home be made a haven for children. Marshal A.W. McKinnon of El Cerrito, assisted by Chief of Police W.H. Woods, B.V. Shirley, Dan Cox, Sergeant H.W. Livingston, Traffic Officers Bert Heath, and A.J. Lambert of Richmond, made the arrests. It required 2 automobiles to convey the prisoners to the hospital. Mrs. Moro last night said the Ouija board had not been used for about 2 years until recently. 2 weeks ago, she said she read of an Eastern woman who wanted to adopt a baby, and she consulted the Ouija board. She says she then decided to consult the Ouija board to learn who it was that killed Jeannie Moro last New Year's Day by running her down in front of her home with a motorcycle. The identity of the rider of the motorcycle has never been established. Walter Grassi, a friend of the family, died with what was supposed to be sleeping sickness, and she consulted the board to learn whether it was sleeping sickness or some other malady that caused his death. Back of my home, she said, there is a hole in the earth about the size of a grave. Every morning for several weeks, we have noticed that during the night, someone has been digging in the hole. Mrs. Moro said she was directed by the Ouija board to go to Oakland and purchase some clothing and a hair comb of several colors for her daughter, Mrs. Bettini. The color specified by the board, she said, had an influence on the spirits. 5 color corset. She could not find the kind of comb she was seeking, so she purchased a corset of 5 colors, including the color of box it was in. The corset, she said, answered the purpose. Soldovini has resided in the vicinity of El Cerrito for a number of years, according to those who know him. And he is said to be an intelligent, hardworking man. The opinion that he may be insane is scouted by those who know him. An examination as to the sanity of the detained persons will be held at 1 o'clock this afternoon at Martinez before Judge R.H. Latimer and an insanity commission composed of Drs. E.W. Merrithew, G.W. Sweetser, and E.B. Fitzpatrick. Okay, so let's dig into this one a little bit. First of all, don't get too excited at the word orgy being used in this article multiple times. It just means they were performing secret rites as a group, which using a Ouija board could fall under. We start off hearing more about the burning of clothes, furniture, and $200. It may be a different number in the other article, but still, all that really matters is that it's a great amount of money to appease some spirits coming from a hardworking immigrant family and their kids. Listed then are the participants that were taken into custody. And this is where Maria Moro's 15-year-old granddaughter is called Clara. But since she is named Adeline in every other document, it just seems to be a simple mistake. Same girl. In attempts to stop the police from entering their home, the family claimed they were about to begin a passion play. And since this was March, not long before Easter, probably it was in April that year, like it is most years, so that excuse made sense. We then hear about Maria's deceased daughter, Jenny, and sadly we find out that she was killed on Christmas while delivering a Christmas package, no less. Doesn't get more tragic than that. Except that the article then adds that her father, Maria Moro's husband, died only weeks before this. A lot to take for one family in a short amount of time. It makes a lot of sense that this family would turn to any means possible to deal with what I can only imagine to be a massive amount of grief. However, it's not just chatting with family. The board then tells them they need to destroy evil spirits and to turn their home into a haven for children. Then there's more shearing of children's hair, and police find a neighbor child in an upstairs bedroom, after which the desire of the home to be a haven for children is mentioned, but there's no expansion on that. Then we hear a bit from Mrs. Morrow's perspective. She hears of a woman who consults a Ouija board as she's adopting a child. It says an Eastern woman. I don't know if that means the Eastern United States or Eastern countries. She decided to use the board to find out who killed her daughter. But this time in the article, it says she died on New Year's Day, when only a couple paragraphs previously it said Christmas. But I'll just dig into some records and find out for sure later which one it was. So then Walter Grassi is mentioned, who is a family friend, and it is said that he died of sleeping sickness, and Maria was using her Ouija board to discover if he really died of that or something else. So I looked up Walter, and I couldn't find anything else on him, and I don't know where he lived or anything about him, so I couldn't get very specific in looking for him. But I did look up sleeping sickness. It's not something I really knew anything about, and it's a nightmare sickness. And it turns out this sleeping sickness was an actual epidemic. It was called encephalitis lethargica, and it was an epidemic from about 1916 to 1930, and it affected millions before it just disappeared. And it turns out it was more of an epidemic in Europe, so perhaps that's why I didn't really learn about it as a California child. But I did look into it, and from Scientific American, it is written, the way it manifested was that it had a profound effect on sleep. It starts with a sore throat, nausea, headache, joint pain, and fever. It's the sort of general malaise associated with the flu. From there, the illness progresses to abnormal eye movements, which often cause double vision as the two eyes are no longer coordinated. Drooping eyelids, an inability to open the eyes, and an irresistible need to sleep day and night. The lethargy lasts for weeks, even in some cases for a year or more. Eleanor Carey, an eloquent young woman living in New York City, fell into a Sleeping Beauty-like trance in February 1923. Many years later, she described these symptoms in a magazine article, saying, "After 2 months of illness, I was in little pain. In fact, I was very comfortable, provided they did not prod me, nor stand me on my head, turn me over in bed, nor dash cold water on my face to awaken me. It was so heavenly just to be allowed to sleep. But these people around me seemed determined to prevent my being comfortable. When the idea finally crept through my sleeping brain that I must waken, it seemed to be a physical impossibility. I wanted to be obliging, but I just could not. It seemed to me to be just as difficult to come to consciousness as it would have been had I been buried in a pit as deep as the center of the earth, where the circular walls about me were of shiny, polished marble. There were no crevices for my fingers on its sides, nor any places to put my feet. But I must climb out of that pit with my bare hands." Perhaps it will give the reader a vague inkling of the dreadful lethargy which completely overpowers the victim of this disease and renders him impotent to make the effort to help himself. These periods experienced by Carey and others came replete with vivid dreams, hallucinations, and nightmares. When patients were woken by calling their name or shaking them, they responded intelligently before quickly succumbing to somnolence again, often before they could fully provide answers to questions asked. The victims could not feed or clean themselves. In severe cases, they were stuporous or even comatose. Mortality in this acute phase of the disease ran as high as 30-40%. Medical science was powerless to intervene and just had to let the disease run its natural course. This epidemic strain of EL disappeared about 10 years later as abruptly as it came, and since then only a handful of sporadic cases have been reported. All of that sounds absolutely terrifying to me, and I'm thinking maybe I need to go back to that for a future episode. But for now, let's get back to the article. So in it, it says that Maria said that the back of her house, there is a hole in the earth about the size of a grave. And every morning for several weeks, they notice that during the night, someone has been digging in the hole. Terrifying. This is the second time mysterious backyard graves are mentioned with no explanation. Again. And now a new detail. The Ouija board told Maria to go to Oakland and get a hair comb or some kind of clothing of several colors for her daughter, and that the different colors had different effects on the spirits, and she ended up with a five-colored corset, which sounds extraordinary. I'd love to see it. It sort of reminds me of Joseph in the Coat of Many Colors sort of thing, but if I remember correctly, Joseph's coat was to represent his birthright, not a protection or anything. So I'm not quite sure how the colors worked. And then the next day we get a little update from the San Francisco Examiner. This would be March 5th, 1920. Headline: Ouija devotees go to asylum. Aged woman, two daughters and grandchild committed, three men released. Article: An aged Italian woman, her two daughters, and a 15-year-old granddaughter were sent to asylums by the Martinez Sanity Commission yesterday, following startling revelations at Contra Costa County of spirit orgies directed by the Ouija board. Testimony of a 10-year-old granddaughter of the aged woman, their own protestations of spirit direction, and claims of spirit control were responsible for the commission's verdict. The women still claiming to be under the control of the Ouija board are Adeline Bettini, 15-year-old Richmond High School girl, Mrs. Santini Bettini, 35, the girl's mother, Mrs. Josephine Solafini, 25, aunt of the girl, Mrs. Maria Moro, 65, grandmother of Adeline, and mother of the other two. The three men taken into custody were found by the commission to be mentally balanced and were ordered released. They are Carlo Soldovini, husband of Mrs. Soldovini, and Luigi and Vico Ferro, boarders at the Moro house. The men described the women as being victims of hallucinations and denied holding faith in the Ouija board or its spirit controls. Now, I must admit, my first instinct with this article was to get very upset with the men because only a couple days prior in the newspapers, they claimed to be believers, too. But now they were throwing the women under the bus, which is like the least surprising thing to do in history ever. But then I remembered they had families and mouths to feed, and perhaps the men knew they just needed to get out and back to work in order to sustain their families. So they said what they had to say. Another possibility is that since these were immigrants and first-generation families, maybe they didn't want the country to look down even more upon Italian people than they did at the time. I don't know. Or maybe they just were assholes who took advantage of the system to blame the women. We'll never know. Now, going to the next day's edition of the San Francisco Examiner, I found a massive front page headline on March 6th, 1920, that read, Ouija board drives policeman to street naked. Okay, that's quite a headline. It's not the event I'm covering, but it's yet another Ouija story at the same time in the same area of California. And the headlines for this story yelled, Mystic Word Sends Man to Seek Enemy. Patrolman Elmer H. Dean of San Francisco creates sensation in Oakland while under spell. Says Ouija told him to find foe. First caught in Berkeley, escapes from hospital. The article for that one goes on to read, Policeman Elmer H. Dean of the Portero Station, San Francisco, was taken from the crowded streets of Oakland yesterday, scantily dressed and in an apparently unbalanced state of mind, because a Ouija board, he said, had sent him to Berkeley in search of some mysterious enemy. The policeman had previously been picked up at Berkeley and sent to the Anderson Sanatorium, Oakland, for observation. He escaped from the attendants and made his appearance on the street, climbing to the running board of an automobile and directing the driver to take him to Berkeley. As the automobile proceeded, commanded by Dean with his revolver, he began to undress. Attracted by the crowds at 14th and Broadway, he jumped out, and then apparently discovering an embarrassing lack of clothing, took refuge in the Central National Bank building. Dr. C.H. Walsworth, in whose offices he took shelter, summoned the police, and patrolman W.R. Jones, arriving with a blanket, wrapped Dean up and took him to the hospital. Dean failed to report at the Portero station yesterday morning, and when policeman John B. Charleston called at the Marymount Hotel in O'Farrell Street, where he lived, it was found that he had not been at home all night. Dean's sister called later at the station and said her brother had gone to Berkeley the night before to visit an aunt, but had first stopped at the Berkeley police station and borrowed a revolver. Captain O'Day filed a report with Chief of Police White and Thursday, setting forth that Dean had been acting peculiarly and talked much of the information he had obtained from a Ouija board. He said he had a message instructing him to capture some mysterious enemy. Policeman Dean was kept at the Oakland Receiving Hospital last night, and after arrest there, physicians will examine him further as to the effect the Ouija board messages have produced upon his mind. And then on that same front page was the headline for our story, Ouija Board Burned, Victims in Asylums, article, Martinez, March 5th. There is one less Ouija board in the world today. Carlos Aldafini is particularly elated about that fact. The board which was responsible for the hallucinations of Soldafini's wife, her mother and sister, and a 15-year-old niece committed to asylums at Martinez on Thursday was destroyed by Soldafini yesterday after the Insanity Commission had discharged him, with Luigi and Vic O'Farrow, also members of the family. Faith in the board's control led the three women and the girl to burn portions of their clothing, $200 in currency, and household furniture before the authorities intervened. When he returned from the examination, Soldafini carried out the woman's postponed rites by building a fire in the backyard and throwing the Ouija board on the flames. So ended the machinations and disasters which followed that particular board. Two of the women have been sent to Stockton and two to Napa. The state hospital authorities diagnose their cases as hysteria and say they will eventually recover. Okay, so women being diagnosed with hysteria in the early 20th century, no surprise there. Standard practice for the time, unfortunately. But this front page of the San Francisco Examiner from March 6, 1920, was crammed with Ouija stories. Not only was there the police and the burning of the Ouija board story, but on the same page is a headline, Ouija said to hasten insanity, contributing cause of lunacy. Mental experts discuss effects. And in the article, some psychologists are discussing the effects of the Ouija board on the human mind. Just seeing this front page, we can see that the reemergence of spiritualism at this time and the commercial production of Ouija boards had profound effects on everyone. And when you see articles like this, it's made clear that the world was sort of falling apart at the time. I kept looking through records, and the women were freed from the asylum the following month, in April. I also looked for records about Mrs. Morrow's deceased husband. I found that his name was Nazero, and he died in April of 1919, but I couldn't find the cause of death. He was listed as a plumber in some census records, however. I then found an article about the hit-and-run killing of Maria's daughter, Jenny, which happened about three and a half months before the event with the Ouija board. San Francisco Examiner, December 27th, 1919. Headline, Girl Hit by Auto, Left to Die. Police Seek Unknown Slayer. Jeannie Morrow of El Cerrito, killed after delivering belated Christmas gift. Article, Richmond, December 26th. Left to die by unknown motorists, whose machine struck her as she left her home in El Cerrito this morning. Miss Jeannie Morrow, 20-year-old San Francisco milliner, succumbed at the Craven Hospital without regaining consciousness. Following a trail of blood, Warren Wright and Charles Beargrone, neighbors, found the unconscious form in a ditch 50 feet from the accident. Chief of Police W.H. Woods at first thought the motorist, frightened at the accident, had thrown the body to the side of the road before speeding away. On closer examination of the scene, he expressed the conviction that the girl dragged herself across the road before losing consciousness. Carried Yule package. Carrying a belated Christmas package, the girl was going to her sister's home nearby. The package, addressed to the sister, had just been brought to the house by a messenger. She left home at 7 o'clock, and her body was found 15 minutes later, just a few feet from her own door. The only clue to the identity of the car's driver is a section of the broken running board found 100 feet from the tragedy by Marshall Curtis Johnson of Steeds Junction. It was torn from the car by the impact of the body and is covered with blood. Sheriff R.R. Veal of Contra Costa County hastened to El Cerrito to join with Chief Woods in search for the driver. Oakland, Berkeley, and Richmond automobile repair shops have been visited in an effort to find the car with the broken running board. Faces murder charge. A charge of murder will be placed against the driver, Chief Woods said tonight. Miss Morrow was still living when Wright and Beargrown found her huddled, face downward, beside the road. They stopped a passing car and rushed her to the hospital, where Dr. S. U. Abbott made vain efforts to save her life. She died 2 hours after the accident. After delivering the Christmas package, Miss Morrow intended taking a train for her work in San Francisco. She was employed by Newman, Magnin & Company as a milliner. Miss Morrow was a graduate of the Richmond High School. Her father, a pioneer contractor, died a year ago. She is survived by her mother, Mrs. Maria Morrow, and a sister, Mrs. Rose Soldovini. The funeral will be held from St. John's Catholic Church, El Cerrito, Tuesday morning. Though the historical records don't tell us everything, we do know that Maria Morrow and her family was going through emotional hell at the time. You add in the story of the policeman, and you realize the whole world was going through hell at the time, and it's no wonder Ouija boards were being used as a desperate last resort by many people. I looked up our policeman who stripped naked in Berkeley, searching for an enemy. And it turns out that Elmer H. Dean had been drafted into the First World War years before this, and was likely suffering from PTSD. In 1920, the world was recovering from not only the major loss of life that came with the First World War, but also from the Spanish flu epidemic that killed so many around the world. Then this sleeping sickness follows that, and I imagine that, not unlike now, everything felt off and a little scary. Looking through census records, I found that Maria Morrow immigrated from Italy and only spoke Italian. This horrible war and pandemics hit, and then poor Maria loses her husband and daughter within months of each other. She's in a strange country where she doesn't speak the language. Her desperation and fear is completely understandable and relatable. This is why I love looking through old newspapers. You find these stories, stories of triumph and tragedy, stories of being human. And even across the sea of times, we relate to another human being and feel, even if they did live 100 years ago. Until next time, you can join the Strange and Unusual Podcast on Instagram at the Strange and Unusual Podcast, and on Facebook as well. And remember, as Poe said, there is no exquisite beauty without some strangeness in the proportion. So, stay strange. Thank you. If you like the strange and unusual, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.